Wise Studies presents The Wisdom of the Desert with the Reverend Dr. Nicholas Buxton. At Wise Studies, we are committed to illuminating the texts and teachings of the world's great contemplative traditions. This course explores the spirituality of the early Christian desert fathers. Over four lectures, Nicholas introduces us to their lives and sayings, with a particular focus on the fascinating writings of Evagrius of Pontus. Nicholas makes the wisdom of the desert relevant to contemporary spiritual practice. In this first session, Monks of the Desert, Nicholas discusses the historical origins of Christian monasticism, the story of the temptation of Jesus in the wilderness, Saint Antony, the first monk, life in the desert, and Pachomius and the beginnings of institutional monasticism.
In this course, we are going to explore the spirituality of the so-called Desert Fathers, seeing also, I hope, how the ancient wisdom of the desert might be relevant to contemporary spiritual practice. We will start by looking at the emergence of Christian monasticism during the early 4th century, when thousands of men and women renounced the world and withdrew to the wilderness regions of Egypt, Syria, and Palestine to seek God in a life of solitude and prayer. What inspired them to do this? What were they trying to achieve? In seeking answers to these questions, we will examine the lives and sayings of the Desert Fathers, with particular focus on the fascinating writings of Evagrius of Pontus, who lived from about the year 345 to 399, and who was described in contemporary accounts as being one skilled in the discernment of spirits. In his theological writings, Evagrius gives a detailed account of the spiritual life and the path leading to the practice of what he calls pure prayer. But first, we need to begin at the beginning with the historical origins of the Christian monastic movement. Tradition has it that Christian monasticism emerged in the deserts of Egypt during the 4th century of the Common Era. According to this story, Saint Antony was the first monk, and his younger contemporary Pachomius was the founder of the first monastic communities. However, the truth is, as ever, much more complex, and the notion that the origins of Christian monasticism can be traced to the activities of one or two key individuals in a particular time and place is rather overly simplistic and probably quite mistaken. The truth is, nobody really knows quite how or why, or even where and when monasticism first emerged, as there is evidence of similar movements arising independently in Palestine, Syria, and the Sinai Peninsula during the same period. Within the monastic tradition itself, it has always been maintained that what in due course evolved into the institution of monasticism as we know it actually began at the same time as Christianity itself, and indeed is arguably its purest expression. But of course, monasticism is not the exclusive preserve of the Christian tradition. It is clear that there were precedents within Judaism, such as the sect known as the Essens, who withdrew from normal society to live in strict obedience to the Jewish law, engaging in rigorous asceticism under a common way of life. Their community at Qumran, of course, being famously associated with the collection of ancient texts we know as the Dead Sea Scrolls. And we can also see from the Bible that the desert itself had a strong appeal to the religious imagination long before the emergence of Christian monasticism. The people of Israel were born from the womb of the Sinai Desert following their exodus from slavery in Egypt, and their prophets would frequently return to the wilderness to commune with their God. It was a place where God was to be encountered, and where the devil was to be resisted. Moses, Elijah, and John the Baptist all engaged with God in the wilderness. So when we talk about the origins of Christian monasticism, we have to take into account the fact that monasticism is not a uniquely Christian phenomenon. There were religious communities of one sort or another in the region of the Eastern Mediterranean prior to the advent of Christianity, to say nothing of the establishment of Buddhist monasticism in India 5 centuries before the birth of Christ. One could perhaps argue that human beings simply have a perennial and universal urge to renounce the world and seek a higher truth. It's just something that some people feel the need to do. And what we call monasticism is just one of the various ways in which this natural human spiritual instinct has been and continues to be expressed. However, this also means that it is virtually impossible to account for the specific historical causes and conditions that gave rise to the particular phenomenon of Christian monasticism in the deserts of Egypt, Syria, and Palestine towards the end of the 3rd century. What eventually evolved into the institutional structures we now recognize as monasticism emerged from a diffuse web of wider religious and cultural trends, each with long and complex histories. Thus, neither the mere fact of the existence of communities living apart from society, nor the spiritual significance of the desert itself in the Judeo-Christian religious imagination are sufficient to explain exactly why the Christian monastic movement suddenly took off when it did. Some scholars have speculated that the early monastics may simply have been men and women forced into poverty by the crushing burden of Roman taxation. Others have suggested that they were fleeing the threat of persecution, whilst a third theory claims that, on the contrary, it was, in fact, the ending of the great persecution under the Emperor Diocletian in the year 311, and thus the lack of further opportunities for martyrdom, that led zealous Christians to seek other ways of giving up their life for Christ. Monks themselves have always understood monasticism as life according to the gospel, and it doesn't seem unreasonable to suppose that the people to whom we now give that label did not at the time see themselves as creating a new formal structure, but were just trying to imitate the example of the first disciples at a time when the church was becoming an increasingly institutionalized part of the establishment. After all, for the first 300 years of its existence, Christianity was basically a deviant sect, clinging precariously to the margins of society, its followers branded as atheists on account of their refusal to worship the gods of the state. Following the Emperor Constantine's conversion to Christianity and his Edict of Milan in the year 313, however, Christians were for the first time free to practice their religion openly. And by the end of the century, Christianity had become the official and indeed the only permissible religion of the empire. In such circumstances, it seems plausible to suggest that some Christians may have sought a return to the radically countercultural spirit of the early church, as recounted in the pages of the New Testament, and in particular, the Acts of the Apostles, where we read how the first Christians lived a communal life, wherein, to quote, "the whole group of those who believed were of one heart and soul, and no one claimed private ownership of any possessions, but everything they owned was held in common." Far from being some newfangled 4th-century invention, monasticism was understood, at least by its practitioners, as Christianity's most authentic expression. Monks were living the life of Christian witness to the full. Whether or not we feel that the historical record provides sufficient evidence for the view that monasticism is simply life according to the gospel, The monastic tradition undoubtedly derives its theological justification from the scriptures, and in particular, the life and example of Christ, as recorded in the pages of the New Testament. After all, the first thing Jesus does following his baptism by John in the River Jordan, which marked the beginning of his public ministry, is to retreat into the wilderness for 40 days and 40 nights of fasting and spiritual asceticism. Given the long-standing and deeply felt association between spirituality and the wilderness, which is found throughout the Bible, it should come as no surprise to us that we also read of how he would often go off to deserted places by himself to pray. The example of Jesus, his retreat into the desert, his practice of solitary prayer, was and still is the inspiration for Christian renunciation and withdrawal, on which the monastic tradition is founded. We should not be surprised, therefore, that some people would seek to follow that example by going into the desert themselves in order to develop a deeper, fuller relationship with God. So, whether historically true or not, it is hopefully safe to say, therefore, that the spiritual origins of Christian monasticism most obviously lie in the origins of Christianity itself. It is not some deviation from the norm, but in many ways, its most literal expression, modeled as it is on the life and example of Jesus himself. The well-known story of the temptation in the wilderness thus became the prototype for the Christian ascetic tradition. We will examine some of its themes, particularly the temptations themselves, and how Jesus responds to those temptations, in more detail in subsequent parts. But it might be worth just spending a moment now to remind ourselves of the story, given its great significance to the monastic tradition. Basically, Jesus has been living in the wilderness and fasting for 6 weeks. We can imagine he must be absolutely famished. Knowing this, the devil, and we'll talk more about how we might understand the language of demons later, the devil makes his first move, trying to tempt Jesus with his hunger by saying, "If you are the Son of God, command these stones to become loaves of bread." Jesus responds with a quotation from the law of Moses in the book of Deuteronomy by saying, "One does not live by bread alone, but by every word that comes from the mouth of God." The point he is making, of course, is that the fullness of our humanity does not subsist in the physical body alone. The human being is an integration of body and soul. In order to be most fully human, we need not only physical sustenance, but also spiritual nourishment.